This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
We have our MGO Blog Roundtable crew here with us, starting off first with Mr. Craig Ross. How you doing this morning?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good to see you as always.
We've been here for 10 minutes and no one's yelled at each other yet, so that's good.
Yeah. The yelling is always only between Brian and Ed.
I yell at Craig sometimes.
He did. Yes, you do. Don't you?
Yeah, he once said that I gave him CTE just by sitting next to him.
No, but that wasn't yelling.
That normally isn't an exchange. That's normally like a one-way sort of yelling. But with Ed, it tends to go back and forth. So we have Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian, good morning.
Hello.
And then, of course, Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Good morning.
Good morning.
So guys, are you having as much fun watching this Michigan basketball team as I am?
I'm having more fun.
Yeah. It is a fun team to watch.
It truly, truly is. I think I mentioned last week how we sit under the basket about row 8, and watching Teske play defense is like I'm just in heaven watching the dude play. And so it's just a lot of fun. The whole team is a tremendous defensive team, top to bottom. So
let's start off first. Let's go back and go back to the Purdue game because Michigan blew Purdue out. Yeah. Hey, think about that. They blew Purdue out. Now this is obviously not the Purdue team. They don't have as many weapons as they had, but the weapons that they do have were silenced. I mean, think about Carson Edwards, 7 for 21, that 1 3-pointer on the day. They did an outstanding job on it.
Well, I mean, that is what happened to Carson Edwards the last two games last year, too. So he had a good game in the 70-69 win at Chrysler last year. Mm-hmm. And then, there was that crazy game where Mars hitting all the threes and everybody else hitting all threes. Carson Edwards didn't actually have a big hand in that. He had like a sub 100 O rating game.
Was it Vince Edwards that game? I think it was.
It was everybody because yeah. I mean they had Klein. Yeah. I mean they had Dakota Mathias. They had so that was just a team effort by Purdue. And then in the Big Ten tournament, they shut Edwards down pretty well. And then you see a lot of help on him, which is something that's interesting because of course they've been a no help defense for most of the year, but against Carson Edwards, they're like, We're going to give some open shots to other people.
Right. Well, I feel like you saw that a little bit in Northwestern, right? I mean, they actually doubled the post a little bit, too, when Pardon was getting some buckets, which, I don't remember if John Beilein defenses doing that too much in the past.
Well, they have some non-shooters on Northwestern's team, so that's something that you had the luxury of doing. And that was like they took Brazdeikis specifically and was like, all right, he's not on a shooter, so he can double. For Carson Edwards, that was a team effort. Like, if he's going towards the basket, help. Just help. And we'll deal with it. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to work really well.
Yeah, I mean, he had 19 points, but it was 21 shots and
he
23 shot equivalents.
50% usage.
Right. And so
I have never seen that before. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, but that's that team, right? Like, he is the man. He came back. You lose Mathias, you lose Vince Edwards. Like, I mean, I can see that happening in a couple of Purdue games.
Yeah, and I don't think it's just a vanity I'm the man thing. I think he's like all they have. I mean, Ryan Klein can get more shots.
Klein can make three.
He can get more, but it's like, dude.
They need to play that Wheeler kid over the walk-on Grady Eifert because Eifert can't do anything.
All right, what's the dude's name on Harms? Are you surprised that he's like nothing?
I mean, I'm surprised he didn't develop a little bit more. I mean, they did a really great job with Haas. But Harms just seems like he's the same player as he was last year. And then that Boudreaux kid, I mean, he's an Ivy League center, and Michigan kind of took it.
Yeah. Boudreaux's not a bad shooter. He'll do well in some games.
He probably should have scored some more points in this game.
Yeah, but in this game, he wasn't a lot. I mean, I was concerned about the Purdue game because I felt like we're coming off the big win against North Carolina, you're coming and playing a team that's completely different from North Carolina. I mean, Carolina wants to get up and down the court as fast as they can, and Purdue wants to isolate Edwards and then get into threes when you take Edwards away. So I thought the fact that we beat them up that badly was impressive.
Let's also remember, like, Michigan hit half of their threes in those two games last week. Came a little bit back to earth, hitting a fourth of their threes against Northwestern, and obviously the game was a lot closer. But I thought in the Northwestern game, you could kind of see what other teams kind of have to do. I mean, you saw Law just, like, pull up 3 feet from behind the three-point line, hit a couple shots late in the game, and that might be your best shot against this Michigan defense, which I thought was telling.
You know what?
Telling.
Watching that game, my takeaway from Northwestern's perspective, I don't think they could have played a better game than they played. Yeah, they hit a lot of contested shots.
They hit
in
some
that
garbage.
Game.
I mean, they had the banker by Pardon.
Well, and their D was good,
knuckleball
too.
Well,
and so
they're good defensively.
That is another takeaway. Give Billy credit. Mm-hmm. He had them scouted. They weren't executing as well early in the game. You saw Collins going nuts on the bench. I mean, I guess he goes nuts all the time. But he was going nuts on the bench because, Xavier Simpson kept getting right. He was hitting hook shots getting right, but he was getting right. He was 4-for-4, I think, in the first half. The scout was take away Xavier Simpson and take away Charles Matt. Take away their right hand. And as the game went on, they got more and more effective doing that. Those guys had off offensive games. They played 5-on-4 with X because they just let him shoot. And with Charles, he got all discombobulated. He couldn't get to the rims. His jumper wasn't falling. I like to see him go post based on what we've seen this year in games like this. But what I would like to see, guys, and I'm curious your take on this, in games like that where – you know, you don't have four guys getting to the basket at will, seemingly like we saw against Purdue, and hitting some jumpers. The guys that are best off the bounce for Michigan, Jordan Poole and Ignas Brazdeikis. I felt like, you know, put those guys in isolations. Give those guys your ball screen action if you were in scenarios like we saw Michigan in on, what was it, Tuesday?
Tuesday night, yeah. Well, go ahead, Brian.
Well, the other thing you can do when someone's sagging off you so much is you can screen with Xavier Simpson and then put Brazdeikis in a situation where he can get downhill. Mm-hmm. And that's a situation where he's excellent. So
yeah, no, I agree with you that their best isolation players are Poole and Brazdeikis. There's not a question about it. But, you know, I don't think that's the way Michigan generally wants to go in the NBA ISO game. That's not Michigan basketball.
You know, your ball screen game. I mean, but they got into some one-on-one situations, and those are the guys that you look to make it happen. I felt like, man, you know, he needs to be, JP especially, needs to be getting more shots based on how he started the game and how much Charles and X were struggling. Look, I don't think Xavier Simpson is going to be 0-for-5 bad. He isn't going to be, you know, 40-50% from three. But he'll hit one or two.
Yeah.
Right? You know, he can go out there and be 1-for-5, 2-for-6. And you can live with that. You can't live with 0-for-5. So you definitely got Eli Brooks giving you a big shot in there. I still think it's going to be big to get Dave DeJulius developed, but not as big. It's not as urgent as getting Brandon Johns developed.
Yes, please.
Well, I mean, I think that Austin Davis is taking a lot of heat for the run that he was in on, and I don't think that's mostly even on him. If you go back and you look at Northwestern's makes during that period, he wasn't really involved in any of them. And then the foul he got on Pardon was ridiculous.
It was
absurd.
You know, that was that guy used to be a good ref, Lamont Simpson, and he. Yeah, I think he's getting a little, maybe the game is passing him by a bit. He's only done six games this year, and so I'm not sure what the deal is.
Yeah, I understand your point, Brian, and I think it's a good one. And
well,
I had
a second half to that.
Okay.
Sorry.
But on offense, there's just a huge difference. Like, you know, Iggy tries to throw him an alley-oop, but I'm like, Teske throws that down.
Yep. I said the same. Yep. Hey.
And it's a turnover, and it gets to Iggy, and it's like, I don't really know if that's on Iggy. I did think his turnover, Davis' turnover, was a foul on him because it's a dribble handoff where he doesn't hand it off. And then the guy barrels into him like he's a screener. I'm like, he's got the ball. That's a foul. And they didn't call that either. So, you know, I think he is not being looked at as a role man, and that's a problem. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that kind of stood out to me.
Yeah, so you know, it's gonna take some time, and now you got some opponents. You're getting into the schedule a little bit, but maybe you can start working those young guys a bit more. So when Big Ten play rolls back around, and I think that's what Beilein was talking about last week after the Purdue game, saying, you know, getting them ready for Big Ten play. I think he meant when Big Ten play rolls back around in January.
Well, I mean, I'd like to go back to this point for a second. I mean, Michigan was ahead 45-30 mm-hmm. with about 17 minutes to go in the game when Teske got his third foul. Now, I wasn't a fan of the calls on either the second or third foul, but so Teske's off, and within 3 minutes, the game goes to 47-45. In the 3 minutes he's off the court, we get outscored 15-2.
Yeah, but I mean, weren't there was a bunch of threes.
13-2.
I mean,
he was on for the first bucket of the run.
Okay.
I mean, Northwestern hit a bunch of threes there too, right? I mean, it wasn't just
the interior defense.
No, it wasn't just
Simpson gets like an open court opportunity and just kind of throws it to nobody.
Right.
And they get a transition bucket the other way back, and like he kicks it to Poole. That's an open three in the corner. It's just, there's a lot of stuff that happened in a brief period of time, and some of it was Austin Davis. I'm not going to deny that, but I don't think all of it was.
Right. No, not by any stretch of the imagination. And I agree with Brian. It was more on the offensive end than the defensive end.
And which is very important. Even if they're hitting their threes, which they obviously were, they were hitting some tough shots. I mean, if you come down on the other end and you can convert, the game doesn't get as hairy, doesn't get as tight, obviously. Right. And you just get more skill, you get more athleticism if you have Brandon. And they know that. We aren't saying anything that they aren't saying internally right now. But it just takes some time with freshmen.
Yeah, so I mean, Johns obviously has the – we've seen the ability. He's just kind of working his way through and learning the system. And I mean, I hope by February.
Did you guys come away, though – as I thought that was a good that wasn't just, you know, a win on it. I mean, I thought that was a good win.
Well, you know, Northwestern is probably better than a lot of casual fans think. I mean, they did lose.
I think it was a gritty win is how I describe it.
Oh, that's,
yeah. I mean, yeah. Northwestern was coming off a 2-point loss at Indiana.
Yeah. And Michigan was only favored by 6.
6, right.
I think it got down to 5, but
I'm talking about Kempo. I'm not talking about Vegas.
So that wasn't, you know, Northwestern is a decent team. You look, I mean, this morning we're sitting at number 4 on the KenPom ratings, and we moved up last
what
night.
What happened last night?
I don't know, but we moved up last night, and
strength of schedule adjustments.
And you look at who they've played. I mean, they've got wins over 3 top 20 teams.
No. To answer your question, Brian, Villanova beat Temple last night. That's what happened.
Temple was actually up. A nice portion of that game. And then Villanova really turned it on in the second half.
Well, a lot of the teams we've beaten and beaten soundly have played pretty well. I mean, Villanova had a bad game against Furman and lost in overtime, but Furman's undefeated. But they beat Oklahoma State. They beat Florida State. Providence is 7-1 outside of Michigan. They have a 3-point loss to Wichita State. UNC just has the one loss to Texas by 3 points. Holy Cross is playing well. Northwestern is playing well. I mean, so you look at 6 of the 9 teams Michigan has played are pretty good teams. And, you know, so that's what's going on.
So here's what I want you guys to chew on while we get to the break. How good is Michigan really? I mean, are they Gonzaga good? Are they Duke good? Are they championship good? And if there is some distance between them and those teams, what do you see it necessary for them to do to kind of bridge that gap? Because I do think there's another level for this team with the components they have on the roster right now. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. So I said, hey, Michigan State is playing at a Red Box Bowl.
I don't know what that damn thing is.
Like, what is Red Box?
I never heard of it.
I hear you. It's fitting Michigan State's playing in the Red Box Bowl then. You know, it should be played in a bowl that don't know what the hell it is. But everyone knows what Red Box is. Everyone other than Craig knows what Red Box is.
As Mitch just said, it is physical Netflix.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
They're red boxes with DVDs in them. Do you know what a DVD is?
I know what a DVD is. Yeah,
you use vending machines before.
It's like an 8-track.
Like an 8-track.
Except it's got video on it.
No Betamax tapes in there. Sorry, Craig.
Folks, the MGO Blog Roundtable. We have Brian Cook from MGO Blog. We have Craig Ross, writer of how many books?
Don't ask him. A couple of books. I'm finishing the third. In fact, yesterday I spent the day at the Bentley looking through Charles Baird's letters. Absolutely fascinating. The first athletic director from Michigan. Really fun, and I found some cool stuff that I'm gonna. This book is done, but I keep finding more stuff to throw in it. So it's the history of Michigan football prior to 1900. I don't know what it's going to be called yet.
So, we can kind of solicit suggestions for names, book titles. Yeah.
Craig Ross's awesome book. Because then when he says the title, he actually has to promote it, right?
Right. There you go. What's up? So Ed from the Power Rank.
Hey, how's it going?
Right, so what do you have going on over the Power Rank?
Yeah. So I do a podcast called The Football Analytics Show. Did a special storytelling podcast about the curse of small sample size.
Really good. I listened to it last night. Excellent.
Thanks, Craig. Appreciate it. Go check it out. It's a football analytics show on any podcast provider.
So just real quick. So Zeke, he just kills X. And I love it. I mean, I know X has his limitations, right? I mean, sure, he's never going to be a great shooter. He tweeted at me, if your guy could shoot 30% from three and 60% from the line this season, we would be back in the Final Four.
He's probably going to shoot 30%
possible.
Is that a bad thing?
Like, I mean, it sounds like he's skeptical.
Well, I think he's probably right, but they may finish in the Final Four even if those things aren't true.
He could just not shoot another three the rest of the season.
I don't care how far you're playing off X. X should go shoot that hook shot. Like, forget the threes. Like, you can get that hook shot off against any kind of defense. Just go do that.
It's
beautiful, too. It's gorgeous.
He's got to be able to get right to do it, though. And they did a good job of cutting his drives to his right off. And every team, here's the thing, because people are saying, well, not every team is going to do that. Not every team is going to be able to execute defensively like Northwestern.
And no Michigan's personnel so
well. Personnel so well like Billy Donlin does. So you won't see every team be able to do that. But Michigan does need to be ready with a plan for the games where, hey, you know, X, he can't get to the rim. Those are going to be few and far between. His jump shot, obviously, is going to be sporadic at best.
Broke.
So, how do you live in those moments? And then with Charles, again, I mentioned it in passing earlier, but I'm curious what you guys think of it. Man, go post, Charles. Go on the block.
Sure. I mean, I'd also like him to be more of a complimentary piece sometimes. Like, he had 25% usage in this game. And it's like, maybe dial that back a little bit.
You're exactly right.
No, I completely.
Let the game come to you.
You're exactly right, Brian. That's why I said, you know, Jordan Poole had four shots in the second half. Right. Come on, man.
Right.
I mean, some of these other guys are going, JP needs to be getting more shots.
Yeah, and you talked about Poole and Brazdeikis, and they have to be the one and two primary options on this team. And
I don't think you'll see. I think they need to be the one and two options, certainly in that game. Based on how things are going, but I don't think you're going to see them downgrade Charles as a matter of game plan.
I think they need to.
I don't think they will
against better teams.
Because I mean, based on what you had seen leading up to this game, why would you do that?
Well, because he can't shoot, and he's got a little bit of a turnaround jump shot now, but he's
50% from three.
Right, that's what I said. Based on what you had seen leading up to this game, up to the Northwestern game, there was nothing to suggest that Matthews shouldn't be one of your primary options.
I mean, I would be thrilled if Matthews finished the season above 40% from three. Thrilled.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm not even expecting that, though.
That's 40, but like 35 would be nice. So the thing with Matthews is, like, I don't mind it when he takes a shot. What I mind is when half the offensive possession is him trying to find a shot. Like, that's not his specialty. Like, he can get to the rim in certain situations. But if it's not there for him, it's time to, like, move it on to another guy and probe with someone else. So
I'm 100% with that. I mean, there's too much time sometimes in the offense with him hunting around for a look and the offense stagnating while he's, you know, but I don't mind when he shoots. I like when he shoots the corner three and it's an open good look. My guess is his percentage on that is not low. You know, so
I like the moment in the Purdue game when Poole gets a flyby on a closeout.
And oh, yeah.
He takes that jumper and he's 4-4 from three, but Charles is in the corner and he's like, give me the ball! Mm-hmm. Give me the ball! And he like bends over in pain that Poole took this shot when he had an open look, and Poole makes a shot.
Yeah.
And then he just is like, oh, we made a three like motion after, like he's bent over and he's making the motion at the same time. So he wants to shoot, and I get that, but like there are situations where he's too concerned about finding a shot. And like Iggy in the Purdue game had like 13% usage. They were really focusing on him, and he kind of let the game came to him in 13 points, and the offense moved really well. And I'd like to see Matthews have that capability. If it's there, go get it. And if it's not,
go get it somewhere else. It's a fine line, but I agree with that. I mean, and the nice part about Brazdeikis, or one of the nice parts, is he hasn't really forced a lot of crazy stuff. I think one in this game where early on, that's not a good one. But mostly, what he's doing is sensible and
ball player.
Yeah, he's a ball player.
Ball player.
You know, if I could, I'd like to reference a couple things that happened post game with coaches. Roy Williams at the end of the Carolina game, I wrote this quote down, said, it's the most frustrated he's been in 31 years of coaching. Now, I think in part he was talking about his own team, but I also think in part he was talking about how much Michigan just took them out of their game.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of hyperbole there. He forgot his entire tenure at Kansas, which was certainly frustrating. But I definitely believe him when he said that Michigan frustrated the hell out of his team. They took them out of everything they wanted to do offense.
Well, there's that period in the early second half where Roy's been peeling the paint. And so they're even more sped up than they usually are, and they're just running in and taking bad contested jumpers really early in the shot clock. And I'm like, when you try to be super fast and Michigan's there, Michigan wins in tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good sign because Indiana's really fast. Michigan State's really fast, and Iowa's really fast. So a lot of their tougher Big Ten teams are trying to go real fast, and Michigan's going to be able to shut that down and take away that element.
Yeah, the other...
Roy Williams, like, I was a little shocked at, you know, just how many long two-point jump shots that North Carolina took. I mean, I got a lot of respect for Roy Williams as a coach. But if analytics is going to teach you one thing, it's like, don't take a long two-point jump shot. Like, step back a foot. And I got to think that's part of, I don't know, I just a thought that I had about that.
Well, that was part of, they want to go fast, so they want to get the shot up. So the guy tries to drive, and he gets cut off, and it's like, all right, we got to get the shot up. And it's not a good shot, but they're still taking it.
Yeah. The other coaching comments post game was Painter. I love Matt Painter. He's probably, after Beilein, my second favorite coach in the Big Ten. He's a real...
Not Izzo?
No. He's a very smart guy and gives credit to where credit is due, which is hard for many coaches to do except for John Beilein. And he said that at the end of his press conference, he said, this is the most productive 10 minutes I've had at Michigan in a long time.
which isn't true. He won last
year. I know,
year.
But it's still so typical of Painter and why I like him so much. The other thing that he said, and this put him on my list forever, he said that Michigan has the perfect rotation. He said the perfect rotation is seven guys. He said the
You're using sixes, though.
I know, but he said the perfect rotation is seven guys because now everybody is happy. And that's a quote from Matt Painter. Yeah. I'm all in with
He's wrong.
And I don't think that developing an eighth guy is really all that important
in this team.
Yes, it is.
It's very important. Okay.
I think it's vitally important.
Well, and if they're going to develop an eighth guy, then I think they need to develop it within the context of their other seven. And not put five guys at the floor in garbage time, which to me is...
Because you realize the seven at this point, we got to get to the phone. So basically, they only need Eli Brooks and Isaiah Livers.
Correct. We've had this conversation before.
This is
I mean, you got such talented guys on the bench. You have a seventh and eighth guy that I feel are struggling and not the answer there, yet you want to play seven.
Let's go to the phones, go out to a guy who's been waiting patiently on hold, Eddie and Callie. Eddie, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Roundtable. Sam, Ira, happy holidays to everybody. Love the show.
Hey, man, happy holidays to you, too.
Was watching the game the other day, Northwestern. I think the telecast was on BTN. Not positive. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, it was.
But as I was watching the game, I think the color commentator was the one that said something that I'm still trying to digest. Still wondering how I feel about it. He said something to the effect of, this Michigan team is very good, and maybe he even used the word great. But he said that the team doesn't have an elite player. You know, that NBA lottery type player.
Wrong.
So I heard that.
Who was the commentator?
John Crispin. I mean,
the
I don't know.
Of basketball knowledge.
Yeah. I mean, that you're right. That's pathetic.
Right.
I mean, on that point, if you look this morning on KenPom,
they show
Ignas as the number seven player in the country.
Is he
not
the
freshman? Number seven player in the country, and that doesn't count defense. And my guess is he's better on defense than the guys ahead of him.
Right. And so, I mean, you mentioned Dockage, and I actually think Dan is pretty.
I know. I thought he's a cut rate Dockage.
Okay. Well, but see, but then Dan says something that just totally blows it up. He keeps talking up Cassius Winston as
that's
the player.
Your voice,
Dan. It's like, are you Dan? What are you talking about? Where are you getting Cassius Winston being this guy? And then so Cassius Winston goes to the bench and they bring in
Foster Lawyer.
He's like, oh, see, now they know they can really go after Michigan State at that spot. It's like, really? Now they know they can go after that spot because Foster Lawyer's in the game? Seriously? Dude.
I mean, it's true. I mean, so the Dockage thing I loved is Michigan State gets a rebound and Lawyer comes back to the ball so he can bring it up because he's a point guard, right? And Dockage put up a replay of this and was like, oh, this is so great! I went, what? What? This is... There are sixth graders who do this. Whatever.
Hey, I wanted to ask you guys a question about the defense. So, Luka Jokić has come in, done a great job. Obviously, this defense is elite, probably the best in the nation. But they still don't foul. And I kind of wonder, because I look back at Jokić's teams at Illinois State, and they did foul. So, I mean, is that just the Beilein influence? Like, how are they working together on this? Is it just that Michigan just has elite talent for this defense?
Well, I think so. A couple of things there. Number one, you have on this team Xavier Simpson, Charles Matthews, Ignas Brasdakis, and John Teske. You have outstanding individual talent, and you know Teske might not be the most fleet of foot, but he guards ball screens way better
so good
than
that.
I ever thought he would. Yeah. But he's seven foot. He doesn't have to be physical to contest shots. And then the other three guys, they are exceptional. They have exceptional quickness. I mean, they can really do a good job of moving their feet and staying in front of guys.
There's a couple things. The lack of fouling on this year's team is not like the lack of fouling on previous Beilein teams, where they're like first in the country or second in the country. So they're more aggressive than they used to be in that regard. And two, when you don't help, you don't get all those reach-in fouls.
Yeah.
So Michigan is mirroring you to the basket and asking you to finish over them. And with the new verticality rules, they're doing a really good job of not getting those calls. So I think they're not a high turnover defense despite having X, because they're not a help defense.
Yeah. Right. And look, they don't need help. That's the thing. Yeah. It'd be different if they didn't help, but they need help. It's like we'll just sacrifice, you know, getting beat off the bounce. But these guys are exceptional on-ball defenders.
Yeah, I mean, when you play defense with your feet, you don't get fouls.
It's easier said than done, though.
It's very much so. It's not easy to do, but they do. They have guys who are spectacularly good at moving their feet and not using their hands to play defense. It's the opposite of Izzo defense, where you clutch and grab and shove and then whine and hope not to get too many fouls.
All right, we got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side and close things out here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket. Early impressions of the Big Ten Now that even a couple of Big Ten games have been played, man, the rankings make it look like the Big Ten is loaded. But then you look at Iowa, they start off 0-2 after I talked to Bup a little bit last week. You know, I said it looks like they're playing a little bit of defense, then they go give up 90 to Michigan State.
Yeah, that was a pretty grim outing for them. I think they just got rattled by Breslin and went downhill in a hurry fast. But the league's very good. Like, you know, you're watching Nebraska against Minnesota, and I'm like, this is a fairly high quality game, and one of these teams is going to finish like 6-12 in the league, and it's going to be Minnesota. But
I don't think so. I think Minnesota's going to do better than that, but.
And Jordan Murphy is back for his 37th year. I can't believe it.
Well, but not just Jordan Murphy. They have two good freshmen, a guy named, Oturo, and he's okay, and they have a guy who can shoot it.
Kulcher is just a shooter.
Kulcher. So, I mean, they sort of piece together some guys. I think it's going to come down to Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin. Wisconsin is really, really good. And they've lost one game to Virginia by 6 or 7 points, and otherwise they're playing. And the disappointing part of that for me is Demetric Trice, who is really shooting the ball well, playing very well, and which means we have to listen to his mother for the next 2 years.
Maybe if he shoots the ball well enough, he won't get to be 1 year.
Yeah, maybe that's right. But Demetric Trice is playing really well, which fits in with Happ and Davidson. That's a nice team, and they're well coached. The guy knows what he's doing, and Greg Gard, and so that's what it looks like to me.
But the league
is deep, and Rutgers is playing terrific defense. They can't put the ball in the ocean, but they can play defense. I think Iowa's talented, especially on offense.
But they don't play defense at all.
A little bit.
I mean, Purdue is good, but I don't think Carson Edwards is a point guard. Indiana doesn't really have a point guard, but Romeo is the real deal.
I think Juwan Morgan is a player.
And Juwan Morgan's
a player, but he is also a liability. Harden went 11 of 15 against him. So, like, he's a good player, but I think Indiana is like a 6 seed, maybe an 8 seed, that kind of level of team. But there's going to be 7-8 teams in this league that are in the tournament.
Yep.
I mean, it's going to be, they have most of their non-conference schedule in the rear view now. And the thing about the 20-game conference schedule is all the games that left were bad games. So their strength of schedule is going to be great. You know, it's going to be fun. Like, I remember, you know, the Trey year and then the year after it where Michigan, like, loses a share of the title on that, like, Morgan tip-in.
Right.
And the league was really good this year, and I'm watching, like, Penn State games that year because I'm just like, oh, this is interesting. And I kind of get that same vibe where I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll turn on
Nebraska. I went to watch that Michigan State-Iowa game for that reason. Yeah. Like, this is going to be a good game. And then,
well, you're playing 2-3 zone, and you can't, gotta watch, like, your boy stop Winston entry passes. It's like, what are you doing?
All right, that'll do it for today's show. Thanks so much for your contributions to the Magic of Christmas Adopt a Family campaign. We got all our wish lists adopted, but you can keep those monetary donations coming in. MagicofChristmasFoundation.org.
Better than